Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter, at GoForItGant. And while you're there on Twitter, please, please give me a follow, at GoForItGant as well. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by 11-time Pro Bowler, 2012 Hall of Fame inductee, the great Willie Rowe. We're going to get Willie's take on the untimely death of former Chargers, former Dolphin, and former Patriots star, Junior Seau. Also, we're going to be joined by Cliff Rold of BoxingScene.com. We're going to get Cliff's take on a big fight tonight, Mayweather versus Cotto, 154-pound division, and it should be an exciting fight. So we're going to get Cliff's take on that particular fight. And also, we're going to be joined by the Game's Pooch Hall, who will stop on by to talk about the great show that is The Game, which airs each and every Sunday. Not Sunday, each and every Tuesday on BET, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central. So we're going to be joined by Pooch Hall also on the show. I mean, great show lined up for you as always. We're going to have a good old time today. And I want to start now with a tragedy and the untimely death of the great Junior Seau. It was confirmed that Junior Seau did commit suicide, a self-inflicted gunshot to the chest. Junior Seau, 43 years young, and unfortunately, he decided that it was best that he take his life. And it's just a sad, sad story, a sad situation. I mean, seeing his mother out there just made you bleed for Junior Seau. I mean, just bleed for his family, bleed for him, and bleed for his family. I mean, that's got to be a devastating thing. Suicide is a devastating thing, and I think, you know, it's a devastating thing to ever have to bury your child. And the reality is, Mrs. Seau is going to have to bury her child, and nobody wants to. I got two children of my own, and that's the thing I don't want to think about ever, having to have to do something like that, especially dealing with suicide. I think the reality is with Junior Seau and some of these guys, and they are going to test his brain for CTE to see if he has any type of issues with that, and that is dealing with the brain. And part of that is brought on by multiple concussions. And so they're going to check his brain for that. His family has decided to donate his brain to science so they can check that. And in checking that, I mean, the reality is they have an opportunity to look at it and study his brain and see the effects of pro football and see the effects of the pounding and the brutality that is the game of football. I love the game of football. And there's no getting around that. I mean, I love the physicality of it. And I think we all love the physicality of it. And that's why it is as popular as it is. And that's why it's truly as possible, popular, I should say, as it is, because of the brutality, because of the physicality, and people like seeing that. They like seeing big hits. They enjoy that. They enjoy that part of the game, that aspect of the game. It is what makes one reason that football is the most popular game in America, hands down. It's not even close. It's not even close. And you look at it, and it's calling into question the brutality of the game and some of the effects of playing football. I mean, it is a trade-off. It truly is a trade-off. You give a good portion of your body and a good portion of your life. I mean, you're essentially taking years off your life, and in doing so, I mean, you're making a lot of money, but you're taking years off your life. And you wonder, is it worth it? The question becomes, is it truly worth it? I mean, you had situations now. And the only way to think about CTE and looking at that particular thing, the only way that you can really study it is and look at it and diagnose it is when a person dies. That's the only way you can diagnose it is when a person dies. So you can only look at the brain, essentially, and study it for that particular condition when the person is dead. And so you look at Andre Waters, a guy who committed suicide at the age of 44. You look at Dave Dorson, who also shot himself in the chest, committed suicide. And Dorson purposely shot himself in the chest so his brain could be studied. And so you look at this whole situation, and it's just sad when you see these guys, what they give to the game of football, and what happens afterwards. I mean, it's just a sad, sad, sad thing. And Junior Seau, all intents and purposes, he seemed okay, according to people close to him. But there was talk that he may have had some financial issues. He had the situation with his wife. He had a domestic dispute. He had the situation where he almost flew off a cliff with his car. He said he fell asleep, and there was nothing to make of that. But you look at Junior Seau, and you also have to look at it from this standpoint. You look at older people sometimes, and obviously Junior Seau is not old, but you look at older people sometimes, and older people, they work their whole life, and as soon as they retire, some of them just go away. They die because they really don't have – they lived for working. That's what they lived to do. They lived to work. And the moment they stop working, and you have some people who just can't quit for that reason because they feel like if I quit, I die. I have nothing to give. If I quit, I die. And in some respect, you look at Junior Seau, 20 years in the league, a long time playing football. But the thing about his job and the thing about most Americans and most in their jobs, most Americans retire 60, 65, 70 years old. Most Americans don't retire at the age of 43. And most Americans' job doesn't end at the age of 43. I mean, most Americans are not retiring, I should say, at the age of 35, 36, 37 years old. They're not doing that. And so you have a guy now at the age of 43, and in some respect is now a fish out of water because he doesn't know what to do with himself. His life is football. What he did, who he was in some respect, is the game of football. Now, when you take that thing away and there is not that replacement for the crowd noise, that replacement for, you know, just going to work every day, guys run into problems. And then you couple that with the pain that comes with playing the game of football. And you look at, I believe it was Andre Waters, when they did his, when they looked at his brain, they said he had a brain of an 85-year-old. This is a 44-year-old man. He had the brain of an 85-year-old. And the onset of Alzheimer's was on his way, basically, in terms of Andre Waters. It's sad. I mean, these guys, you know, and I also look at it in terms of when a person graduates from college and they come out of college. When you come out of college and you get into the world, you're on some level or a fish out of water because now you're trying to, in some respect, navigate through a world that you really don't have any clue about. Only thing you know in a lot of ways is high school and school. From high school, you go to college. That's the only thing you know about. That's your experience with the world. And in some respect, you can compare it to that as well because, again, these guys, all they know is the game of football in some respect. And I'm not going to say all of them. But, you know, a lot of guys, all they know is the game of football. And so – when that happens and that's taken away from you, you have to retire, you have to move on with your life, and you don't find that replacement, unfortunately, you may have and see things that happen to you, things like what happened to Junior Seau may happen. And you, I mean, it's just, again, it's, I can't emphasize how sad of a story this is. I mean, this, the man took his life. He took his own life, and he's a young man, and 43 years old. I mean, you're a young man and have a lot to give at the age of 43 years old. You have a lot to give at the age of 43. And unfortunately, Junior Seau didn't really feel that way about his life, and unfortunately, he is now gone. And you look at, and it's, you look at the 1994 Chargers, the team that, the only team in Chargers history to go to the Super Bowl. Eight players off of that team are dead, and they all died before the age of 44. Let me repeat that. Eight players from that roster are now dead, and they all died before the age of 44. The age of 44. These are young men. These are young men. Young men. And at the age of 44, eight of those guys, before the age of 44, I should say, eight of those guys are dead. You had linebacker David Griggs die in a car crash 5 months after that particular Super Bowl. You had Rodney Culver, running back, who died in a plane crash back in 1996. You had linebacker Doug Miller, who was struck by lightning while camping and died in 1998. I mean, it's just, you have their center, Curtis Whitley, who died back in 2008 of a drug overdose. You have Chris Mim, who died of a heart attack in 2008, Sean Lee, who died of a heart attack in 2011, and Lewis Bush, who died of a heart attack last December. And now you have Junior Seau, who just died this past week. That is eight players from that roster who are now dead and all died before the age of 44. All are dead before the age of 44. The age of 44, everybody. I mean, it's and some of those things you can't necessarily relate to football. Maybe you can relate to heart attacks of football, I guess, on some level, guys carrying a certain amount of weight or guys, you know, eating the same way they ate when they were playing football and when they were active. I mean, you could make your argument it's that, but, I mean, these are just, I mean, all tragic situations. I mean, you guys drug overdose, you had light getting struck by lightning, plane crashes and car crashes and things of that nature. I mean, it's sad. It's just truly a sad situation. It's truly a sad situation. You wonder almost if the 1994 Chargers are cursed on some level. I mean, it's, you look at it. Eight guys. And 1994 was what? We're in 2012, 18 years ago. And, you know, side note, when you look at things from the 90s, it doesn't really seem that long ago. But, I mean, 1994 is 18 years ago. So put that in perspective. I mean, 1992 would be 20 years ago. I mean, it just doesn't seem like it's that long ago, but it truly was 18 years ago. 18 years ago. And the thing about it is, I believe it's about 70% of players 2 years after they retire go broke or get divorced, I believe is the statistic. So it's like, okay, if you have a son, would you let your son play football? Would you allow your son to play football and essentially take years off your life in some respect? Would you be okay with something like that? And it's hard to say. I mean, quite frankly, honestly speaking, I love the game of football. I enjoy watching the game of football. Football is king in America. But I tell you this, I wouldn't push my kids to play football. I would hope that they would not play football. But at the same time, I mean, if a person really wants to do something, you really cannot stop it. I mean, I'm not going to discourage it, but at the same time, I'm not going to encourage it either. So the reality is I really would not want my son to play NFL football. Point blank. I don't want him to play NFL football or any football at any level because these concussions don't start in the NFL. I mean, you got guys who had concussions in high school, had concussions in college. So you look at that and you're saying, I mean, yes, I mean, it seems like the NFL could have done more. But it's, with this lawsuit, a lot of these players have lawsuits against the NFL. With these lawsuits, it's kind of hard to figure out or even ascertain whether or not these head injuries came from, these concussions came from playing football in the NFL. Or did these concussions come from playing football in college? Did these concussions come from playing football in high school? You don't know. You don't know. But obviously it's an accumulation of concussions, multiple concussions. And the thing about it is the NFL, it's that mentality, you know, you play when you're hurt. You play in a lot of ways no matter what, because the reality is somebody's there and somebody's looking to take your job. And so, and we talked about this a while back, but the reality is, you know, when you're pretty and you're good looking, everybody loves you. Everybody's going to do what they have to do to keep you around. But the reality is when you start to fade, when you start to have those wrinkles, they're going to look for the young one, the young one with the tighter body, the young one without the wrinkles. And that's national, that's football. They're always looking, that's sports in a lot of ways in general. They're always looking for that replacement. They're always looking for that cheaper alternative. They're always looking. So every time you step out on that field, that court, someone is looking to take your job. Someone wants what you have. Someone wants what you have. And that's the reality of it. Someone wants what you have. And so, in order for you to not let that person get what you have, you got to fight. You got to fight for what's yours. And that is your job. Because at the end of the day, ultimately, your kid's got to eat. The mortgage got to get paid. The wife has to get taken care of. All these things need to happen for you to have and enjoy your life. And sometimes for that to happen, you have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice. And that sacrifice is playing when you're hurt. That's the sacrifice that guys have to make. Playing when you're hurt. Playing through concussions, things of that nature. And you can understand it because guys only have a short window to make X amount of money. When you have only that short window to try to make as much money as you can, because the reality is, when it's all said and done, you may not be no use to anybody, to any company whatsoever. So guys have to maximize and get what they can get while they can get it, as much as they can get. And so that means playing hurt. That means fighting through various ailments. That means doing those type of things, whether you want to or not. That is the reality of that situation. That is the reality of that particular situation. And this next story kind of ties in to the whole situation with concussions and everything. The New Orleans Saints this past week, a few of the players got penalized for what happened with this whole bounty situation. Guys now have finally got the penalty and got what they're going to get, finally know what they're going to get. And you look at it now, you have Will Smith, who's going to get 4 games. You got Scott Fujita, who's going to get 3 games. You got Anthony Hargrove, who's going to get 8 games. And you got Jonathan Vilma, who's going to get 16 games. And you knew the league was going to come down hard. If you're a league that says you are all about protecting players, so on and so forth, and you have this particular situation come out, you have to act. And they acted. Roger Goodell is acting, and he acted swiftly. So it's a stiff penalty. And it's almost like I look at this whole situation, and I say, yes, I mean, you have to react. But I almost think, in some respect, in looking at this whole situation, I compare it to this. At your job, there's always those unwritten things that people do. They always have those unwritten things that people do. And, you know, you come in, some people, okay, it's okay to come in like 5-10 minutes late when the boss is not there. It's okay to do those type of things. But the moment somebody gets caught coming in late consistently over a period of time, the boss now can do what he has to do. If he wanted to fire that person or reprimand that person, he can do it. Because technically, you're not supposed to be late. And I think it's similar to the situation with these bounties. You know, technically, you're not supposed to do bounties. Technically, you're not supposed to do these type of things. But these things happen and have happened in the game of football. You remember many years ago, Charles Martin for the Green Bay Packers. He had on his little towel there. He had names of guys that he wanted to take out, and he tried to take out Jim McMahon. You remember Buddy Ryan with Louis Zendejas and that whole situation. So the reality is this has been going on in the game of football. This has been a part of the culture of football. These guys, unfortunately, got caught coming in late by the boss on a consistent basis. And that's why they're in the situation they're in. Let's bring in now 2012 Hall of Fame inductee, 11-time Pro Bowl, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
Doing good.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Well, I just think they got caught. The only thing bad about the situation where I've been hearing guys talk about it is, the league went and talked to the team and told the team not to do it for a couple of years. But the NFL could have went and sat down with the players themselves, too, with the team, and right, let them know what was going on. And that's the argument I've heard, and I agree with that argument, that, you know, the league could have went and sat down with the New Orleans Saints players and said, y'all don't need to be doing this. So there's got to be, or did Tom Benson even know about what was going on, the owner? So there's got to be something where, yes, we know that the coaches were warned, but who else got warned? You know, did right. The players get warned? Obviously, it doesn't seem like the players got warned or anything. So, you know, it's kind of a tough situation for the players to be in, when they don't know that the league has already warned the coach, you know, or coaches about the situation.
And to your point, Willie, I mean, if you're an organization and you've been warned, you've been warned, and you still allow this type of thing to go on in your locker room, in some respect, are the players culpable, or is it the team that should be the one that's getting the blame here?
Well, we don't know how organized it was. We do know that the D coordinator had, you know, something to do with this. I don't see how the players can get. If the players didn't know anything about it and didn't know, have any idea that they had gotten warned, then, you know, it's not a fair shake. But, you know, the commissioner had to do what he had to do. It could have been a lot more guys, you know, and it's only two guys that are still currently on the team.
Right. But, I mean, I understand your point. I just think
– two key guys.
Two big guys, definitely. I mean, the guys that
The middle linebacker is the quarterback of your defense, and you
right.
have Will Smith, who is your best pass rusher, that's missing four games.
Right. I mean, they're really, really – I mean, it's a harsh penalty. You're talking 16 games for Jonathan Vilma. 16 games. You're talking a season now. I just think –
for a middle linebacker, I mean, this, you know, that's a year of income he can't get back, and he did take a pay reduction this year anyway. He's a 30-year-old linebacker, so I mean, you're taking one of his last years away from him playing football. So that is tough.
And the reality is, I talked about earlier, but you only have a short window to make X amount of money, and so I mean, you're talking taking away years from guys, taking away. I mean, you're messing with guys' paycheck, guys' livelihood here. But I just think from the standpoint, I don't think players really should have gotten in trouble here. I think it should have just been the organization. I thought the message was already sent through Sean Payton, through Mickey Loomis, through Joe Fitt, through the forfeiture of the draft picks. I thought all those – the message was sent there. I didn't think the players – I didn't think you needed to go after the players in this particular situation. I understand why. I definitely understand why. I just don't think it was necessary.
I think he just had to send a message across the board. I mean, he just had to send a message. You're right. I don't understand if they got warned on more than one occasion. I just don't understand why you would continue to even do this or even. You know, I think somebody should have met with the team and told them as soon as it was announced that we can't do this anymore. Don't be betting on nobody else. We've been warned by the league, and you know, this can't go on anymore. But at that time, you got to think back in 2009. That's in 2010. I mean, the Saints were winning a lot of football games, and they still continue to, you know, going to the playoffs every year. And, I mean, when you win it like they have won the last few years, I mean, you know, I guess you forget about what people are saying, you know, because you win the game. So, you know, it doesn't really matter at that time.
But I would say this. I mean, if the players were really truly warned by the organization, but the organization allows it to go on, then in some respect, the league, I mean, there should be some kind of hierarchy here. You have the league who goes to the ownership. Ownership who goes to general manager who then goes to the coaches. Now, they're the boss of the Saints in some respect. They are ahead of the Saints. So the players are doing what they're allowed to do, what the organization is letting them do. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they didn't go to the owner. They didn't go to the player. They just went to the organization. They went to the coaches. And I probably just you know, the president probably knew about it. The GM might have known too, but they didn't go to the owner, and I don't think they went to the players.
But the guy still, the ownership probably had to know. Everybody knew that they were warned. They knew that this could not happen anymore. And if you're ownership and you allow this to continue, ownership, I mean, you're the head of the whole situation. It's your organization. It's your team.
So you think the owner knew? You think, I don't know if Vincent knew.
I think he knew what was going on. I just think, like everybody, it was a part of the culture. They figured
it was
part of culture.
And I don't think they thought it was that big a deal anyway. I don't think it
right.
was where it was something where they're looking, you know, it's not like, let's change the scenario. It's not like they felt like they had some illegal drugs, cocaine, or heroin in the house. It's like
right.
they, you know, maybe we had a little, you know, some drinks, some alcohol, maybe a little marijuana in the house. It wasn't like they were thinking they had some illegal drug present. Well, they think the police are going to raid the house and somebody's going to jail. It wasn't that type of situation.
Right. I understand why he did it, and it's kind of hard to argue against what he did here because you do have to send a message. But at the same time, it's almost like, you know, the message to me was already sent. The message was already sent. Now these guys are looking to appeal the situation, and we'll see what happens. I mean, we'll see if they're successful. I mean,
well,
they're
the message was sent and the message was reinforced. So
right.
it's definitely, they would. I think they were definitely made an example out of, and if the league wasn't in a situation then with all these lawsuits and stuff about concussions, I don't think it's as big a deal. I think that even magnified it with the whole situation with the league. And adding on top of that, the death of Junior Seau this week, it only magnifies everything. So it really, really has put football under a bright, bright spotlight and not a good one.
And when you talk about the whole situation with Junior Seau and some of the things with the concussions and the lawsuits and so on and so forth, and other guys who Dave Dorsons, the Andre Waters of the world, who've committed suicide and things of that nature, you're right. It's almost like you can, when you hear those type of stories and you hear the effects of football and some of the effects that football has had on these guys, in some respect, you can't argue with what Roger Goodell did. You really cannot argue.
All guys on the defensive side of the ball, all guys that brought the wood, you know, they're real good at hitting, you know, all the guys that would have these type of exceptions because they were doing a lot of tackling in their career.
Right. And Willie, and you brought up Junior Seau, and it's just a totally sad story there. I mean, a guy 43 years old, 43 years young, took his life. I mean, that's just a tragedy. Any memories for you of Junior Seau?
Well, a couple of things. It was ironic that I saw you last weekend, and I also saw DeMonte Dawson, who's going in the Hall of Fame with me, and I asked him how Junior Seau was doing because I knew he was in San Diego, and I was asking about Junior Seau at the draft last weekend. Mm-hmm. And when I talked to DeMonte after he died, that morning, a guy had named Stan, I don't know the guy, DeMonte told me, had called and asked Junior, did he want to play golf? And Junior said he didn't want to, he couldn't make it. I guess that was before his girlfriend left to the gym. So, you know, I mean, you know, a lot of guys, Junior know, I don't think Junior realized how much people really loved him and how great a football player he was and what he meant, you know, or even if he did. And we don't know what was going through his mind. It's just
right.
real, real sad. But what I remember for him won't be on the football field. It'll be from the Pro Bowl, watching him play with his kids in the ocean after practice and how much fun he had, how vibrant he was. You know, he loved to be in the ocean. And I just remember watching him with his kids playing in the water in Hawaii and how much fun it looked like he was having throwing his kids up and playing with his kids in the water.
Wow. That's a great, great story about Junior Seau. And you look at it now, Willie, you look at that 94 Chargers team. I was talking about it a few moments ago. 8 players now have died from that particular team, all before the age of 44. Not all suicide, some heart attacks. You had a few car accidents, plane crashes as well. Various ways that those guys died, but that's pretty scary.
It is scary, and I've been thinking about this. I will make this argument, and when they had their top 100 list, Obviously, I was a little upset about myself. Junior Seau. Ray Lewis, I talked about this on Sirius the other day. Ray Lewis is a great linebacker, and they had him in the top 20. Junior Seau was Ray Lewis before Ray Lewis. They had identical blitzing the gap. Junior Seau blitzed the gap more. He has more sacks in his career than Junior Seau. I think it's Clay Matthews, Junior Seau, and then Seth Junior in sacks as far as the linebacker that has sacks. Junior Seau was to that Charger organization before they had a star player. Or, you know, they had some real good players back in the day, Kellen Winslow, some of those guys, but nobody like Junior Seau. Junior Seau was the quarterback of that franchise. Junior Seau never had the supporting cast around him Ray Lewis had. As far as defenders around him, the D-lineman, and you know, Ed Reed, a Hall of Fame safety playing with him. I will make the argument that Junior Seau was a better football player for a certain time period. Now, is he as hard hitter in some situations as Ray Lewis? I'm not going to say that. But Junior Seau is one of the top 40 players to play in the NFL, because of longevity, because of what he did for all them years in San Diego, and because he would be at work at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning every day. He was right there. He was dependable. He was respected. He was the leader of the locker room. And he did that for 20 years. So, I don't know what your argument is, Paul, but I don't know how this guy, even in the top 100, he went to the Pro Bowl 12 times. You know, he was the San Diego organization before they had, when they weren't having a good football team. And like I said, Ray Lewis is a great linebacker. Junior Seau did not have the supporting cast throughout the years that Ray Lewis has had on the team. Name me somebody who was on those defenses with Junior Seau other than Leslie O'Neal that was a perennial, you know, program. Rodney Harrison some years, but other than Leslie O'Neal, that was when Junior was almost done there. But Leslie O'Neal was a you know, six-time Pro Bowler. Other than Leslie O'Neal, I don't remember the guys who Junior Seau played with on that football team.
You're right. I mean, I think that's a great, great point that you bring up about Junior Seau. And also, you can talk about longevity. 20 years, lasted 20 years. That's a long time to play football. That's a very long time to play football, and he did it. 20 years.
And he was starting at the end of the 20 years. He wasn't the backup. He was starting when he went to Miami, and he was starting when he went to New England. Now, when they brought him back that last year, when he made a run, I don't think he was starting. But for 16, 17 of those years, he was the starter.
Right. And, I mean, he really, really was a great, great linebacker in this league. And
great at USC. He was great coming up through Oceanside. He was the man at USC. He left them when he was a true junior. He was a top five pick, and he was great when he walked into the league with the Chargers. He was the man on that team. For 14 years, he was the man.
And looking at his situation now, 20 years in the league, I mean, age 43, so you figure he's played football pretty much his whole life. In some respect, I mean, was he almost like a fish out of water, having to navigate through life now at this point?
I think the structure of the game, and just by them, you know, just by the story I heard about him, I heard when he was this is the end of his career, when he was with the Chargers, when he was with New England, that they went and told what's the linebacker's name that's on ESPN now?
Are you talking about Bruschi?
Bruschi. They went and told Bruschi to tell him that they needed him to come in later. He was getting to the facility before the strength coaches were opening up the locker room, the weight room. He was getting there at 4 in the morning. And those guys were like, Bruschi, he's coming in too early. And I think he did this every day, Paul. I think that, you know, he was going home and he was getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning and was at that facility in that weight room or whatever every day. So you're right. You know, I think if he needed it that structure that bad, then he should have just went on to being a coach. But sometimes it's hard for players that are that great to transfer into being coaches. I don't know why he didn't pursue that if he wanted to be around the game that much or even coach at San Diego State or whatever. I'm pretty sure that if he loved the game that much, he could have got a coach job at any level if he really wanted to do that.
And you look at it now, Willie, I mean, you played football for a long time yourself. When you retired, was there a huge adjustment for you? And how hard was that adjustment?
There was an adjustment, but it wasn't an adjustment where you got to get to the point where you're thinking about not ending your life. I mean, you have kids. Junior's got ES kids, right, in San Diego.
ES kids, yeah.
In San Diego, well, he did this. You know, my situation is a little different. I got kids that aren't here. So, yeah, I have a daughter that's moving here this year, but my kids aren't even in town. Junior had his family, right? He had his whole family there, right there, you know, with him. Now, we don't know the situation going on around his family and with his kids and everything going on. And I know that from hearing everything now, he hadn't dated that girl that long. And I know he was dating another girl, and everybody knows about the incident in 2010.
Right, with the domestic incident and also driving off the cliff.
And I don't know, or embankment or whatever, but it was
right.
Far down. No, I don't think that's the same. I thought that was the same girl he was with. If I'm not mistaken, Paul, I don't think he's talking to that girl anymore.
I know. Yeah, I'm not really too sure. I know they did say that he sent text messages to his ex-wife and his three children, his children, I should say, a day before he committed
suicide.
That he loved them, yeah.
But the girl he was with a couple of years ago and had a domestic incident is not his ex-wife, and it's not that girl that he was with. The girl
okay.
he was with now, what he supposedly met, before he's from Dallas, he only had been dating her a few months. But
okay.
to my point, obviously he did not find anything that made him fulfill him the way football did. He had a lot of business. He had the restaurant. I know he had an investor that had took money from a few guys, a lot of money from Junior and some of those guys back a while back. I forget when this happened. But we'll never know, Paul.
No, I mean, you don't. I mean, but you were able to successfully make that adjustment from going from playing football and to just becoming a regular person, a civilian, basically.
Well, probably in another thing, Paul, I mean, you know, I was smart enough or had good enough people around me that didn't let me run through all my money. And, you know, I come from a good family structure. And football to me, you know, especially when I got older, was I understood it as a job and a business. I didn't let football consume my whole life. You can't let football and what you were as a football player consume your whole life. Will it always be a part of me? Yes. You know, I was one of the real good elite players to play the game. Junior Seau is in a class where he, to me, any middle linebackers that were better, in the middle linebackers better than Junior Seau. You know, you got to put him and Singletary, Ray Lewis. I put Junior Seau in that elite class of athlete that ever played, period, not football, athlete, but in the way for him to play 20 years and conduct himself. So it's hard for a guy, when you that good at something, it's hard for you to let it go. And it's going to be hard on Ray to let it go. And it's hard for me to let it go from the standpoint of just the competition. You know, when you're feared like those guys are feared, you know, when a guy brags about, oh, I got out to Ray Lewis, I got out to Junior Seau, I beat Willie Rowe for a sack, you know. When guys are going to, well, I talked to Isaac Bruce when we were there, and they had a guy that came from Oakland, and the guy had beat me. And when he got to St. Louis the next year or two, he was bragging about he beat me in Oakland. Well, he didn't beat me in St. Louis, but he got me one time in Oakland, you know, a guy named Albert, I forget his last name. But when you're that, when you respect it like that in that sport and you know that, you're that good, and guys respect you like that. It's hard to walk away from something that that you are, you know, the cream of the crop for a long period of time, and you have that type of respect level. That's what you miss. You miss being respected when you walked on that field and battling the battles. You miss the battlefield, and I don't think Junior can live without the battlefield.
And what about the crowd and just hearing your name and the cheers? How much do you miss that?
You miss that too. Yeah, I mean, all of that. That's part of it. The battlefield, the arena, the excitement, all of that. You miss all of that. All that's encompasses in the battlefield. You miss. You know, the structure, going in the locker room. You have your trainer that tapes you. You have your equipment guy that helps you put your pads on. They put that stuff on them that makes it, you know, the pads stick. You know, the pregame ritual, the build up. You know, you miss having your body hurting, and then somehow, even through all the pain, you go out there and you can perform at a high level, knowing that you did it through whatever adversity you were dealing with that week, and you went out there and played a real good football game, and your team won. You know, you missed that. And as much as Junior say, I won a lot in his career. You know, at some points when I was in New Orleans, I didn't win. I think Junior went through some losing too, but he won a lot. And, you know, all the excitement, think about all the excitement, the way he ran around. And they said he did that in practice every day. They said he did that in practice just like he played. So it's something he was that great a football player and that competitive that without that sport, and after he played it so long, he cannot live without it.
Right. And, I mean, I guess that's the sad part of it all. I mean, football has been very good to him, and the reality is, I look at it this way. I mean, in a lot of ways, you look at some people, you know, older people, you know, work their whole life, and they can't retire because they know if they retire, they're going to die. And in some respect, I think you can look at it with Junior Seau and that way, because he's a guy in 20 years. I mean, 20 years. Usually a person, a regular job, when you retire, you're 60s and your 70s. He was only 43 years old, and he couldn't find that replacement, like you said. And I guess it's tough. I mean, it's got to be tough. I mean, that's you doing something you did pretty much your whole life, and then it's gone. And you have to find something to replace it, and that's not always easy. That's truly not always easy, especially something you truly, truly love.
Well, and like I said, if he really loved it that much, then he should have just stayed in it.
Mm.
Then he just should have kept coaching or doing something involved with football. You know, if that's what he needed to make him happy, and it was just that hard for him to let the game go, then stay within the game, do something within the game. But you got to talk to someone and let someone know what's going on. But, hey, man, you know, that's easy for us to say because we're not in a situation and we don't know what's going on in that man's head. Obviously, he had a lot of stuff going on he was dealing with. So, you know, I hope he gets to rest in peace now. And whatever the demons he was dealing with, he doesn't have to deal with them anymore.
And you look at it also, Willie, from the standpoint now, the situation with guys in terms of playing football. Did you realize or do you realize now that you possibly could have taken years off your life by playing a game of football?
You don't think about it like that. I mean, it's such a great game. You have so much fun. You know, It's just such an honor to be playing in the National Football League and being a part of that. So, you know, I didn't look at it like that. I looked at it as I'm so happy to be playing football. I'm playing in the NFL. I'm making a damn good living.
Right.
So when you don't look at it like that. Now do I look at it? I understand that. You know, you put stuff in your body, but I don't think as far as, you know, taking those toward our shots, anti-inflammatory, I don't think we, you know, you're doing too much more than what anybody else, you know. You're doing more because you're beating your body up, but I didn't feel like I was just doing something crazy to my body. I was doing something excessive other than the hits. I mean, other than the blows you're taking and hurting. Maybe I'm destroying my body some, but I mean, as long as you take care of your body after you're done playing football, you're not destroying your heart. You're not destroying your organs. You know, unless you take too many anti-inflammatories. So I don't feel like, you know, I mean, the problem with the concussions, they cause dementia and all of other stuff. ALS is another thing that's happening to a lot of guys, and that can be contributed to concussions too, or the, you know, the protein leaking down your spine, you know, from all the hits. So, I mean, I don't feel like that. I feel like it was a privilege to play in the league. You know, I think the league has provided for me and for a lot of guys a lot of stuff I got to do that in my life that I never would have gotten a chance to do and see. It's just like going up there to New York and that beautiful trip and getting to stay at that nice hotel and hang out with those guys. You know, and get to meet you, and bring up my kid and Delray up there. I wouldn't, you know, change that for anything. So I think it brings along a lot of good points and bad points. And, you know, I wouldn't want to say I would change it just to die earlier, but I wouldn't change anything that's happened with me in football. No, no way, no way.
And you look at it now, I mean, we talked about the concussions and You played a position where left tackle, you're hitting somebody pretty much every play. I know you stated previously on the show that you really never really suffered any type of concussions that you know of. But do you constantly try to – is there anything different you do with your mind to try to keep it sharp? Or do you pay attention to whether or not you notice any type of slippage going on in terms of your memory or things of that nature?
Well, I have a good memory. I mean, I'm not gonna say I didn't have any concussions. I did get hit in the head a few times, and I remember one game we were playing. Dick Stanfield was coaching me, and I went down to chop a guy. I forget, but you know, I was laid out on the field and didn't get up for a little while. And coaching, I was like, "Oh, well, look, you laid out there. You might have been out." I said, "Well, maybe for a little bit, but I got up. You know, you keep on playing." You know, so I had a couple of instances that you get dinged around some, but that's part of football, man. It's gonna happen. You get out on the football field. The good thing about playing left tackle is you can kind of boom hit you with your hands, and you're not, you know, when you're pass blocking, you're not gonna hit head to head. You know, when you're run blocking, you talk to lead with your hands, not your head. So, you know, when you explode into a guy, you want to explode underneath his pads, you know, not up that high. So, you know, you're taught not to lead with your head. So, you know, if you know how to use your hands, you know how to use your body, you don't have to put your head in there. You know, and a lot of times the good thing about being as tall as I was, most linebackers I hit were shorter than me. So I wasn't going to, when I got to the next level, I wasn't going to run into a guy that was 6'4". I remember the linebacker, Lieber, he's with San Diego. He's with Minnesota now. He was tall. So I remember hitting him one time, and I got dinged up when we played the Chargers because he was 6'4". But most of those guys on the second level are 6'2", 6'1". They're not as big, so you're not going to be head-to-head with those guys unless you're your height. So, man, you know, it's part of the game. You know, you just have to just try to work out, and I make sure I do my cardio and try to take care of myself. And, you know, what can you do? You just got to try to live your life the best you can and treat people like you want to be treated. And that's about it. I mean, you just take the good with the bad, and hopefully it's a lot more good than bad. But, you know, that's all I try to do. I try to make sure I eat as good as I can eat, and I try to make sure I stay active and work out. And, you know, that's pretty, I mean, what else can you do? That's what, same thing with him, same thing with you, Jeremy, same thing with me, same thing with Jeremy, same thing with you, Paul. I mean, right now, you know, you got to work out, take care of yourself, Do what you got to do to make sure your body feels good.
And looking at it now, I mean, you look at it in terms of, I know football opened up a lot of doors for you. I mean, allowed you to meet a lot of people, including the great myself. But, I mean, you look at it, you look what football has done for you and everything. It's a physical game. It's a brutal game. And unfortunately, some people die young. There's a lot of people that are dying young because of the game of football. Now, would you let or would you stop one of your kids from playing the game of football?
No, my son played in the sixth grade. It was sixth through ninth, so he was one of the little guys on the team. I don't think he really liked it. He's a straight-A student. I wanted him to play more basketball, but he chose not to play sports anymore, and he hadn't played sports. And I only have one son that was – so my daughters, you know, they're not going to be playing no football. That's just flag football anyway. But, you know, lacrosse, they play lacrosse a little. One of them is a real good swimmer, my oldest, Jordan. But, no, he doesn't play football. He gets very good grades, so he doesn't have to play sports. He needs to be physically active, but I don't care if he plays sports. And I'd rather him not play football. You know, at this point, he's so smart, he doesn't need to play football.
But let's go to something more happier. The NBA playoffs are on right now. I mean, a lot of things going on, a lot of twists and turns. Chicago Bulls, Philadelphia 76ers, you got Rose out now for the season. You got Joakim Noah with his ankle, so he's uncertain at this.
Yeah, what happened to Noah? I missed that.
He twisted his ankle. He was running down the court, dribbled down the court. He twisted his ankle bad.
High ankle sprain?
It was a sprain. I didn't know if it was high ankle or not, but I know it was a bad sprain. They said he was on crutches at the end there. He tried to come back
there
and play. He couldn't do it. He didn't look good. He didn't look good. I'd be shocked if he played tomorrow. I'd be shocked if he played tomorrow because it didn't look good. He really had no mobility at all. No mobility at all. X-rays came back negative, but again, he did have crutches, and at this point the team is not ruling out a fracture. So who knows? But it looks like to me with the Chicago Bulls now, Rose injured throughout the course of the year. Luol Deng injured throughout the course of the year. Guys missing a lot of time, and now you have Noah going down. It just seems that, like, this team is just worn down. And you can look around the whole league, and it to me, at this point with the playoffs, it's become a survival of the fittest. Josh Smith, he missed yesterday's game. Avery Bradley dislocated shoulder. So, I mean, it's survival of the fittest at this point. It's going to be the team that is the healthiest, and we got Stoudemire as well. But the team that's going to be the healthiest, that's going to win this title.
It is going to be the team that's the healthiest, and I know that the Oklahoma Thunder lost their guard earlier in the year, and then they picked up Fisher. So, yeah, and they picked up Derek Fisher through the trade. So, I think Philly's healthy. The Miami Heat are healthy. The Thunder are healthy. The Pacers are healthy.
Right.
The Lakers are pretty healthy. San Antonio's done a good job of maintenance. They set their guys down. So
right.
You're right. And I think Memphis got Randolph back last year, Rudy Gay was hurt, and they're healthy right now. So you're right. I think it's going to be the team that's healthy. I give the advantage to Miami in the East over any team with their talent level and with Wade and James, and they rested Wade during the course of the year, so he still can take over in games as he did in the third for the Miami Heat. And, you know, in the West, it's going to be, like I told you before, it's going to be a tougher road in the West. It's going to be some drag outs in the West. I like Philadelphia. Indiana is a team that can give Miami some problems. I still say that they can't match up with them across the board with that speed and athleticism. But
that size, going to be to their advantage.
Okay, West and Hibbert has to play big. Hibbert is going to have to be real big on the defensive end. I don't think they have enough to slow them down. And I don't think they have enough firepower unless guys are not going to be able to score enough to slow down. I don't think they're going to be able to have enough to stop Miami. They couldn't stop them in the regular season.
No,
so,
I think they'll be competitive. I don't think they would. They can't beat them, but they'll be competitive.
They'll be real. It's going to be a competitive series. On
right.
top of that, in the West, when it comes down to those series, it's going to be clash. And I also think you can't count Boston out. Boston is still tough. Ray Allen's played good the other night, and I think Boston's going to be tough in the East. I think now looking at them, I think they're going to win this series against Atlanta, and I think they'll survive to the next round. But in the West, it's going to be tough in the West.
And yeah, I would agree with that. It's definitely going to be tough out West. But I look at the East, and Miami is just the class of the Eastern Conference. They have the most talent. Anytime you throw those three guys out on the court at the same time, Wade, Bosh, LeBron, you have advantage over any team in the league, and point blank. So I think the reality is they're another year sharper.
Another thing, Paul. Anytime you throw those three guys out and they have somebody that off that bench like Chalmers or somebody that steps up and makes shots, then it's hard to beat those guys. If they have a guy that'll step up off the bench other than the big three and give them 10, 15, 20 points, how you going to beat them?
Definitely. I know, I agree. It's definitely with all that talent, with all those guys, I mean – LeBron and Dwayne Wade, you arguably have the two best players in the game of basketball. Arguably, I don't think they are, but you can make arguments for it. But so it's going to be tough to beat those guys. And real quickly now, Willie, big fight tonight in Las Vegas. Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, 154-pound championship on the line. I believe it's the WBA belt. I don't think Floyd loses here. I don't see how Floyd can lose here. I see he has speed advantage. He has the reach advantage. He's just a better fighter. How do you see this one playing out?
It's going to be a good fight. It's not like he's fighting Victor Ortiz. He's fighting a real, 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 real good fighter. And the Cotto's only had one defeat. The other defeat, Margarito cheated. So this guy only has one defeat. I don't think he's quick enough to get to Floyd as much as he's going to have to get to Floyd. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I think, as usual, Floyd takes over later in the fight. But Floyd might knock him out in about a tenth. If he doesn't knock him out by the tenth, it'll go to distance. But I think Cotto, he's going to – Floyd says he wants to go after Cotto. If he goes out to Cotto now, you got to be ready because Cotto gonna fight now. Floyd likes to have those antics, but Floyd is a boxer. Floyd respects the game of boxing. He respects his opponents. He respects guys that do that for a living. And when you hear Floyd talk, he has a lot of respect for Miguel Cotto. I can tell you that right now.
Definitely, you definitely saw that throughout the whole promotion. His respect for Miguel Cotto. And the thing with Floyd Mayweather does do a lot of talking. He knows how to sell himself, but he also knows how to work hard, and he works very hard for what he has gotten to this point. And we'll see what happens tonight, but I don't see him losing, and I see him beating Miguel Cotto tonight. But to your point, it's going to be a good fight. It's going to be a competitive fight. I'm very interested. I think it's going to go a lot like Pacquiao-Cotto, where Cotto and Pacquiao were kind of competitive for the first few rounds. And then Pacquiao took over late and ultimately stopped him in the 11th. Something like that.
And basically what you see happening is, Cotto and Pacquiao and Mayweather are fighting the same guys. And, they got to fight each other. Hopefully they can work out the money. Florida said he won't give more than $40 million or whatever. And hopefully they get it worked out, but. Floyd's got a tough test with him, and I talked to my cousin earlier today, and we were talking about this. Floyd is, they had a stat on the other day. I don't know if you saw this, Paul. Floyd is by far ahead of active fighters of guys. He had a plus 30 ratio of getting hit to not getting hit,
right.
And he doesn't get hit, and that's the thing. Now, Mother Nature catches up with all of us, and I was talking about how when Dale Hoyer started slowing down, he slowed down, and it was all downhill once he started slowing down. When does Mayweather start slowing down? Will somebody ever be able to catch up with him? I don't think it happens anytime soon, and that's why I think he said he's going to retire at 37, because Mother Nature's going to catch up with everybody. Mayweather has never been hit a lot.
Right.
And but Mayweather can't get aggressive with guys sometimes. If Mayweather starts connecting on him, it's going to slow anybody down sooner or later during the fight. But when does Mayweather start slowing down? And I would have to say, as much as Mayweather talks mess, you got to put him in the class of he is in the top 5-10 all-time great fighters, probably top five in my book. What do you say about that, Paul? With his resume,
he's up there. I mean, you got to let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. I think it's like
I'm talking about regardless of what happens in his fight. I mean, he's up there.
Oh yeah, he's up there with the
all time best. He's up there now. He is a great boxer, and he is great to watch. So yeah, he's up there. Let's see the fight. I agree with you. I say by the 10th round, maybe Mayweather takes him out. But it won't happen until the 9th or 10th round. I don't think it's going to go for 9 or 10 rounds. But Cotto's a good boxer. You know, Mayweather's got to fight Pacquiao next. I mean, soon. They got to work this out.
And we'll see what happens, Willie. A pleasure talking to you, as always. Wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we'll see what happens tonight.
You too.
Willie Rowe, 11-time Pro Bowler, newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And pleasure talking to him, as always. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, what up? It's Corey Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Picturica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man Paulie G and Jeremy. Get it!
And get it is what we do. We're about to get it now with one of the stars of BET's The Game, Derwin Davis from The Game, the one, the only, Poochaw. Pooch, how are you, sir?
Hey, what's going on, Apostle Paul? What's happening with you?
Not too much. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me, my man.
And Pooch, let's look at it right now. I mean, The Game doing well. Ratings are still up there. Still a buzz about the show. You got to be excited what's going on with The Game.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm really excited about what's happening with The Game, man. The Game has been a huge life changer for me, man. Like, you know, I want to make sure all the fans and everybody knows that I'm super thankful and happy that they, you know, were able to tune in to The Game when it was on the CW, to get us from the CW to now on BET. And what it did for me, Paul, was allow my acting skills to get shown, man.
Right.
You know, people are definitely taking you know, me seriously as far as being one of these up-and-coming actors. You know, one of these up-and-coming young actors in Hollywood, man, and I'm just really happy to be, you know, saying one of them, you know. I'm about to work on this new project called Ray Donovan with Liv Schreiber, Elliot Gould, and John Voight, which I heard you talk about boxing a little bit earlier. I know Mayweather fights today, but I play a fighter on the show.
Okay.
Play Daryl, and then I'm about to head off to Toronto to go work on a project called Warehouse 13 for the Sci-Fi Channel. So, and I'm writing, and I got a secret rap project coming out, my dude.
You're a busy man.
You have to, man. You have to, brother. There is no there is no room at second place. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to do it all, man. Like, you know, when you look at some of the greats who were doing it before us, you know, the Wills, the Denzels, the Robert Downey Jr.'s, the Jamie Foxx's, the Leonardo DiCaprio's. I mean, they got stuff. Justin Timberlake, they got all types of different things happening other than just it being, you know, I'm an actor or I'm a rapper or I'm a singer. It's kind of like, let's do it all. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's kind of how I want to do it, man.
And you talked about your growth as an actor. Compare Pooch Hall before the game to Pooch Hall now as an actor.
Oh, I think where I'm at now, I'm so much stronger. Being able to recognize scenes, being able to recognize, you know, characters' objective. I mean, I do so much more in the game to where I'm able to try different different ranges and stuff like that. And then, you know, working on, you know, Ray Donovan, you know, I'm acting opposite John Voight and Lear Schreiber, you know what I'm saying? So you got to have your A game. And, you know, I think I've grown so much just from learning every day on set, you know, just the stuff they allow me to do in the game, because I think one of the reasons why people watch the game and tune in, because a lot of the issues are real. And, you know, and that's kind of how I approach all my work. It's not acting to me, it's real life. So I want to make sure that people leave something that I've done and say, yo, that kid put it down, man. He ain't no joke. And that's kind of where I'm at.
And you're definitely putting it down with the game. I mean, let's talk about your character, Derwin Davis. You started out humble. Now you're a star wide receiver. And right now it's all about the legacy. Talk about the evolution of Derwin Davis.
Yo, it's definitely about the legacy, man. I think that you want to, I think as an actor, as an entertainer, as a human, you want a full-on circle of events so that you can come back to where you say, you know what, I lived. There's completion there. Like, I'm happy with how my life was and is, and I don't regret anything. And, you know, I worked hard to accomplish the things that I accomplished in God. And I think that with Derwin Davis, you know, I think he always knew that he could play in the league. He always knew that he could contribute. He always knew that he had that something special. And I think with that being said, where he came to his own, you know, where he came into his own, I think he let everybody know that, like, hey, I'm for real, I'm official. And with that being said, and especially, you know, things change when you start bringing kids into the world.
Right.
Now he has a son, and he wants to make sure that his son is taken care of and everything. So, you know, sometimes you may not have life after athletics. You know what I mean? I know right now people are trying to figure out what happened to Junior Seau and why he did what he did, man. And, you know, I had the luxury of just meeting him in passing. And, I mean, just in passing, just like, hey, you know, I'm a big fan. He's like, oh, thank you. He's like, thanks, blah, blah, blah. You know, just real cool, real cool, nice soul, good energy. And then for him to do what he did is just like, it's you know, it's like, damn, what happened? What was going on? So I think with, like, Derwin's character, I think with how he's doing it and where he's at, he wants to make sure that there's a full completion so that when people say, you know what, the legacy, he worked hard for it, he earned it, and he deserves all the accolades and all the stuff that comes with being a star and so forth. You know what I mean? I know sometimes people are like, oh, man, you kind of mean to Melanie. And I'm like, well, sometimes Melanie don't understand. I mean, from day one, there was a lot of times Melanie didn't really understand a lot of stuff that Derwin was going through. And, you know, he wanted to make sure that she was there and he wants her to be there. You know, so I think we're going to find out what happens at the end of the season. Will she be there? Will she not? And what's going to happen in season 6?
And that should be very interesting. We had Barry Floyd on the show a while back. I mean, good guy, funny guy. He's definitely a good guy. And it seemed like this year you guys have added more comedy, mixed in more comedy this year. Is that the case?
Oh, absolutely. I think what BET did, BET was listening to the fans, and I'm going to make a point in a second as far as listening to the fans. the fans, you know what they want to see. And when they first saw BET doing their thing on the first season, I mean, our first season on BET, we were just getting our legs underneath us. It was a work in progress. So, we took pretty much probably 85% of the formula that was the game on the CW over to BET. But there was that 15% that got lost in the shuffle, you know what I'm saying? So we had to make do with what we had.
Right.
So with that being said, and we did our first season on BET, we had to work some stuff out. We had to find some stuff. We were getting our legs. We were getting our voice. Because if you think about it, it was almost like a year layoff. You know what I mean? I was very fortunate to continue working, so I just went right into the game. So I was ready. But with that being said, BET listened to what the fans, they wanted more comedy, and wanted maybe people laugh. And then not to mention, we were safe to say that we had, we were safe to say that we had a full season to learn from, man. Like, we only had, if I'm not mistaken, did we do 13 episodes on the game? I think we only did like 13 episodes, dude.
Okay.
My first year back on BET, so... we were trying to force a lot of stuff in. So then all of a sudden we get picked up to say, hey, we're back for season 5, 22 episodes. We can do more so they can kind of stretch some stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that listening to the fans, they wanted to add some more comedy in there. They wanted to try to get it back to what it was. But understanding that the characters are going through growth and experiencing different things, unfortunately we didn't have Kelly back like we thought we were going to. She had to handle some stuff health-wise. It wasn't by choice that she didn't want to be there. She had some health issues. That's why she couldn't join us. Kelly Pitt's character.
I miss Kelly.
I totally miss Kelly, man. She's actually someone I consider a friend, man. Like, she's good peoples. Was rip-roaring, ready to go on season 5. But unfortunately, something did not go in her favor. Mm-hmm. Which caused her to have to sit that year out. But then also, because I was on another show before the game had come back, I had another deal in place. So therefore, when my deal was up last year on season 5, I immediately signed on to Showtime and started working with John Voight and Liv Schreiber. Now,
okay.
A lot of TV networks don't let you do 2 shows. Showtime said, hell yeah, you being the lead over there, whatever, you got a huge fan base, you can still work over there on the game. It's just, the game's in second position, but it's not to where, it can't be worked out. It's not like I left on like a Charlie Sheen note, you know what I mean? No disrespect to Charlie Sheen and CBS. I love everyone over there. CBS, Paramount, they're behind the game as well. And Charlie Sheen, I'm a huge fan of, so, no disrespect to him. But as far as, like, me, being on the show, they're trying to work out the deal now so that I can be on there. I hope it does work out, man. So, I'm able to do both. I'm able to bring some fans from the game and BET to Showtime and from Showtime over to the game. I hope that I'm still part of the game season 6, man. It would be a shame that if I'm not. But right now, that's where we are. We're kind of in limbo right now.
So it's kind of up in the air. Season 6 is up in the air.
No, season 6 is here. No, yeah. Season 6, they got picked up. It's just right now, Pooch Hall is
for
not.
For you, personally.
Yeah, man. So we gotta get me on there, man. We gotta figure something out.
And
figure something out, man.
You are one of the stars of that show. We're talking to Pooch Hall, one of the stars of BET's The Game, which airs each and every Tuesday, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central on BET. Pooch, this year you guys added Brandy to the mix.
Brandy. Brandy, that's my girl, man. She good peoples, man. I think we definitely was a game. It's almost kind of like signing a I would have to say it's almost like signing a Peyton Manning in a sense.
Definitely,
to,
I mean, that's a heavy hitter.
Yeah,
heavy hitter.
Yeah, she's a heavy hitter. She brings so much to the show. On like on the set and off the set, man, she really cool people. So professionalism and the fact that she wants to make sure that every scene goes as well as it can and everything. And it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, their dynamic is going to be season six, you know, because even if I'm not on the show, I'm still a fan of everyone over there. So
right.
I'll continue to watch. But I plan on, as far as I'm concerned, Pooh Talk wants to be on the show, and I plan on being there. I'm putting it out there right now. But I'm excited to be, but I'm also excited to be working with Liv Schreiber and John Voight, too.
And you talked about it. I mean, I mentioned Barry Floyd. You said that's your man. We talked about Kelly. You said that's your man. You're really your girl, I should say. But you're really close to this cast. And I look at this cast, and it's almost like a family to me. I see you guys. I saw you guys on Monique a while back, Wendy Williams. It seems like it's a family affair with the game. Is it truly like that?
I can only speak on the people who I hang out with. I hang out with Barry Floyd, Jigga, who plays Bibbs, occasionally Hosea Sanchez. You know, we do a lot of events together, he and I. PJ, I talk to PJ, plays Irv.
Okay.
Let me see, Gabrielle Dennis. Like me, Gabrielle Dennis, Barry Floyd. Like, we all break bread together, man. Like, we all have dinner, hang out. You know, our family is close. You know, Dion plays Shanti. You know, it's just one of these things, man, where I think Mara put together a nice cast of people who just, you know, let's make it work.
Right.
So, but just, you know, like I said, as I started to grow in popularity, as I started to grow as far as, like, my talent, so did my popularity, and I started to branch out and do other things.
Right.
But my first home is the game, and over there at BET. CW even as well, because I worked with CBS after the game got canceled the first time, which is why I'm in the position that I'm in now. You know, it's all good problems to have there, Paul. You know, I'd rather be saying I'm having a problem trying to figure out if I can do two shows or working on one show as opposed to like working on no shows or no movies, nothing. But I'm working, man, and my family is good. I just bought a house and. Everything is looking up for Pooch Hall, man.
And basically, it's not one of your 99 problems.
No, man. And on top of it, I'm writing. I'm writing a film right now. As a side thing, not a side thing. Like, we're gonna get it done. With Lee Davis, who Spike Lee produced his first movie called 3 AM. And we're working on a project now, which we wrote, but it's supposed to be my lead action type movie.
Okay.
I'm hoping to have Ray Lewis involved with it. Me and Ray have been in talks. He's supposed to be helping me and being a part of it, so it's going to be big. And, you know, I look forward to working with him and Lee Davis, Terrence J. You know what I'm saying? Just throwing some names out there who, you know,
right.
They say, hey, let's go, Pooch. You know what I'm saying? My man, you know, Consequence, rapper Consequence, you know what I'm
okay.
saying? It's just one of these things where it's just like I'm just gathering up all these people who are fans of me that I'm fans of them and say, well, let's collaborate. Let's get something going. Let's get
Definitely.
Something done.
The we is better than me, right?
Yes, sir.
And looking at it now, I mean, you're going to play Ray Donovan, you're going to play a boxer. But you were a boxer yourself in Massachusetts back in 1994, Golden Glove.
Yeah. I fought for
Talk
real.
Talk about that.
I told them things for real, man. I ain't no slouch, man. I ain't no like boxing in the YMCA for a month and then calling yourself a boxer. Man, I fought out of Petronelli Stable all my life. And right now I'm training at the Zoe Center in Anaheim with Rashawn Underdo, who's been training me, who actually I trained for Ray Donovan in addition to working with my man Dave, who was a trainer on Ray Donovan. But as far as like keeping my hands nice, you know, I was working with Rashawn Underdo in the Zoe Center.
Okay. You definitely got the hands. So it's legitimate. It's real. The hands are there for you. And let's look at it now. I mean, big fight tonight. Mayweather.
Yes, sir.
How do you see this one playing out? I don't see Mayweather losing this fight. But how do you see it playing out? You box. You've been in there.
Well, here's the deal, man. You know, shout out. First of all, I want to, you know, give any boxer any props when they step in that ring, because that place ain't no joke. And, you know, anything can happen in the ring, dude, anything.
Yeah.
But when you have skills and you have knowledge, then you know how to box. And a lot of people think boxing is just going in there and slugging away. It's like, no, it's a strategy. It's a skill. So, like, when you go in there, you just got to stick to your game plan. And if it all goes right, it ends up in whoever's favor it's supposed to be. But, I mean, you slip up one time, you can get caught. Now, if Mayweather plays his cards right, which he usually does, because nobody likes to lose, first and foremost. Let's put that out there. Nobody likes to lose. But sometimes when you get hit, let me tell you something, Paul. You get hit, man. Sometimes you get hit, you can't do anything about it. Like, your whole body will shut down.
Right.
Like, it just your motor functions will just be all, like, delayed. You see what I'm saying? So you have to stick to your game plan. And the thing about boxing, and this is why I'm explaining to a lot of people why boxing is kind of fell off a little bit. That's why you have to – everyone tunes into Mayweather fights, because him and the Klitschkos are the only ones really, really doing it. So it's kind of like, damn, you know, you got Mayweather. That's why everyone's on Mayweather's shoulders and his back. Like, come on, we want to see you fight. What's old boy's name?
Pacquiao.
Everyone's on it. That's gonna be a super major omega fight.
If it ever happens.
It's gonna happen. It has to happen. You wanna know why it has to happen? Because of the revenue it's gonna generate and what it's gonna do for boxing. Because in all honesty, and they both know that they kind of have the upper hand, because there's no other boxers who's going to put on a major show like those two. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen. If that's the way, that fight, it's like when people said Vander Holyfield and Mike Tyson was going to happen, then it was never going to happen, but then it happened. You see what I'm saying? It's going to happen. Okay.
You just
but
don't want it to happen when they're past their prime.
It's not a choice. That's not our choice. See what I'm saying? That's not our choice. They can, you know, anything can happen, dog. Like, even tonight, they can be ready to fight. Mayweather can be, all right, we're going to go fight. And all of a sudden, he trips and falls and bangs his hand on the chair. And now his hand's swollen. Well, that's the fight. He's not fighting. Anything can happen. You can call a fight.
Cool.
You see what I'm saying? So it's one of these things where I think Mayweather has the upper hand and knows how he wants his legacy to be. So he'll go and box his man, And just know that, you know, a lot of people want Mayweather to lose just because, you know, they may feel he's cocky or whatever. But the boy can fight. You see what I'm saying? You gotta give him his props. The boy can fight. You see what I'm saying? And he knows how to fight. You see what I'm saying? But Cotto ain't no punk either. But as far as the skill set and the knowledge and what have you, you have to give the upper hand to Mayweather. That's just the way it is. But like I said, just like they say in football, on any given Sunday, anyone could lose. It'd be a missed field goal. You know, say it's like, oh, well, the Patriots are a better team than the Giants. But the Giants won. They won because the Patriots missed a field goal. It doesn't matter how they won. The Giants won. The score was 28-27. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the Patriots did. The Giants pulled it out at the end of the day. At the end of the game, when the fourth quarter, we hit zero, and it's 28-27, even though when you looked at the highlights on ESPN, it looked like the Patriots were killing them, it doesn't matter. If all of a sudden Mayweather's in that ring, and it's like, oh, it's not even a real fight. Oh, you can win a fight on a jab. You can win a fight on a 1-2. It doesn't have to be a slugfest, and that's why a lot of people are like, boxing sucks now. Because it's not fun. Because people aren't banging. There's no bangers like the Hagler's and the Hearns and the Durans and the Sugar Ray Leonard's and the Mike Tyson's and the Evander Holyfield's and even some of the and the dudes in between. Because that's what the dudes were fighting for. They were just fighting a fight. Because I love to fight. I'm a fighter. Bernard Hopkins, B-Hop, he's a fighter. Half these cats want brands now. They want to be movies and rappers and all that. So therefore, it's like they got an image uphold. You know what I mean? David Warren was a bad boy. He was one who, I have to give him props. I have to give De La Hoya props because he did it without carrying himself up, and also he turned it into a business, but he could
definitely
also fight too. You see what I'm saying?
He's eating very well. Eating very well.
He eat real good. And he did it with class. That's what my dad used to tell me all the time. He said, whatever you do it with class. And I like the way De La Hoya did his thing. He did his thing with class. He lost his last two fights or what have you, but he did it with class. And he's someone who he's still very well spoken, and still got his hand involved in a lot of things out here in L.A. and in Vegas. And you know, he's eating good. His kids are eating good, and his kids' kids are going to be eating good.
And that's
so
great.
I don't see Mayweather losing tonight, but I don't think it's going to be a bang out fight. It's going to be a boxing match of a 1-2, couple of combos where they just wear each other down, and eventually he wins the decision.
And Pooch, you talked about the rapping side of you. Talk about your style. What are we going to see on a Pooch Hall album? What kind of things are we going to see? What kind of songs? What kind of music?
All my music is going to be, it's going to be edgy enough that we can play it in the club, and people are going to rock to it, but it's also going to be not too edgy where, you know, some moms can't make up her own little dance to it and not have fun. It's going to be something that everyone is going to be able to relate to and like, because that's what I'm all about, man. I'm trying to be up there with Will, and I kind of mold myself in his image of just being like the people's champ.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not comparing my rap style to his. He has his own style. I have my own. But as far as I'm concerned, I want to be the people's champ, where it's like whatever you add me to, it's going to become that much better. I want to be the Michael Jordan to whatever a person's situation is, whether it's your movie, whether it's your TV show, whether it's your song, whether it's, you know, me co-hosting, me playing basketball with you. Yeah, I want to be... I want to be the Michael Jordan to whoever and whatever situation is out there.
Now, do you freestyle at all?
I do freestyle.
Why don't you kick a little freestyle? Maybe we do a little cypher here.
We can do a little cypher?
We'll do a little cypher here.
Hold up. Let me turn it to you. Let me hold up.
We'll do an acapella. No music, just a cypher.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Yeah. Alright, it started this morning when I got on my interview with Paul. He said, yo, I'm on the phone with Pooch Hall. I said, yo, let's do this interview, we're going to have a ball. Okay, I'm not talking about when I was small, I'm talking about where I'm at now, I'm big, I'm talking to you all. I'm having so much fun, and I want to thank the fans, because I'm the man that made it back again from somewhere that wasn't supposed to be. Yes, the G-A-M-E, I'm the Pooch, D-O-double-G. Here I go, I play Derwin Davis. I'm no rookie no more, see? So, here we go with my flow. We're talking about a fight tonight. Hell, who's going to win? Is it going to be Cotto? Not so quite. Don't move so quick, because I'm the one who can stick and move. But I'm going to say I got a shout-out to dude, Mayweather, giving it to you. Here we go. With the flow, freestyle
okay,
the top
yeah,
of the dome.
Yeah, okay, one, two.
I'm
we got money,
out,
man. Money made tonight. Money made,
you know,
I don't want to disrespect
nobody. You know what I'm saying? It's gonna be a good fight. You know what I'm saying? I don't want Cotto to run up on me, be like, yo, I heard you was dissing me on the radio, and then we gotta have a situation.
Nah, yeah.
I'm playing.
Big dude. So yeah, that was a nice little freestyle. You brought it there. I mean, you got it done there. Nice lyrics there. So when's the album coming out?
Right now, like I said, we in the works right now. There's a lot of stuff that's going on with me right now. There's no stone unturned, man. Like, I want to do it all because, you know, just like I was saying about De La Hoya, I want my kids to eat, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I know what I came from and where I'm at now to where it's like where I want to be. So I want to make sure that, you know, my people are taken care of, and that when I leave my legacy, that I know that I did it to where I'm like, man, I can breathe. You know what I mean? You take care of dad now or, you know, whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, that's kind of what I want to do. But also, too, it's not work for me, man. It's all fun.
Definitely.
You know, I think each one of us was blessed with a gift, and I think that with that gift, you got to just find that gift and take advantage of it and make it work for you.
So it's all about the legacy.
It's all about the legacy.
It's all about the legacy. Now, Pooch, where can fans connect with you? Where can we find out all the information about Ray Donovan and some of the things you got going on there?
You can go to BT. You can go to BT.com. You can check me out on Twitter. @IAM_PoochHall.
Okay.
Ray Donovan, of course, is on Showtime. And, you know, right now I'm working on a website. But it's not up yet. Bradley Frank at Rogers & Cohen is my publicist. So, yeah, man, it's just one of these things where, you know, soon I have more information out there for y'all. To get up on. But, like, you know, fans, rally up, man. Let's make sure that I'm on season 6 of the game. Continue to tune into the game. And I thank you. Tune in to Ray Donovan when it hits. And I'll keep y'all posting. But like I said, follow me on @IAM_PoochHall on Twitter.
Definitely. And Pooch Hall, you can check Pooch Hall each and every Tuesday on BET, 10 o'clock Eastern on the game, 9 o'clock Central. Check him out. Great, great show. Funny show. A lot of great things going on with Pooch Hall. Pooch, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. Wish you nothing but the best of luck. Let's do this again.
All day, Paul. I appreciate you, boy. I get at you when I start to have some more fire for you.
Definitely, definitely. I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks, Playboy.
Pooch Hall, one of the stars of BET's The Game. Brought some fire there with that freestyle, brought some fire. I was trying to get in there. He wouldn't let me in. So, you know, you guys got to stick around maybe later or maybe another time. I'll bring the fire, bring the pain with some of my lyrics off the dome. You know what I'm saying? Off the dome, I'm home, chilling in the place to be, PG. Yeah. You know how it is. But pleasure talking to Pooch, and make sure you follow him on Twitter. @IAM_PoochHall. Follow him there. And he's got a lot of great things going on with him. And he likes Mayweather tonight. I like Mayweather tonight. I cannot really see a scenario. Well, I can't. Let me take that back. I can't see a scenario where Mikael Cotto can win this fight. But, I mean, it's going to be very tough for him. That hand speed that Floyd Mayweather has is incredible. The thing about Floyd Mayweather, he does not get hit. And that's the big part of boxing. Hit and don't get hit. And Floyd Mayweather does not get hit. He does not get hit. And so that's really what's going to happen. That's what it's going to come down to tonight. Floyd Mayweather, he does not get hit. He can block. He can defend. And he's such a precise and accurate puncher. Such a precise and accurate puncher. And so you look at that accuracy, and Willie Rofe talked about it. He had a +30 advantage in terms of getting hit to not getting hit. And so he does not get hit. You cannot hit Floyd Mayweather. He has not taken a lot of punishment throughout his career. He's 35 years old, and Willie Rofe talked about this, and at some point he will get old. I just don't think he will get old tonight. He does not get old tonight. But he will get old. And that's just the reality of sports. That's just the reality of boxing. Guys get old overnight. I don't think Floyd Mayweather gets old, at least not tonight. He's going to get old at some point. Mother Nature does have a way of catching up to you. It does have a way of catching up to you. And he said he wanted to be a more active fighter, and he said he wanted to stick around until about the age of 38. So we'll see. 35 years old now. You figure he's got to spend some time in jail. He's going to jail in June, right after this fight. So a few weeks after his fight, he's going to jail, serve some time there. He'll be in there to at least August, possibly longer. And he said he wants to fight in the fall, and I don't know how possible that will be. He said he's going to fight one more time in 2012, and I'm interested to see if that really is going to happen. But, I mean, if you're Floyd Mayweather, you know, you got a lot of things going on. You got this fight, obviously, but you got jail time standing in your way. Jail time is standing in your way right now. Right after this fight, you're going to jail. Well, maybe a few weeks after the fight. Not right directly after the fight, but a few weeks after the fight, you're going to jail. And that's just the reality of that situation. But it is what it is. It really is what it is, and you get the sense he's really not fazed by it. I don't know if it's just bravado. I don't know if it's just trying to be tough, but, I mean, he doesn't seem fazed about the possibility of jail time. But we'll see. Not the possibility. It's definitely going to happen. But he just doesn't seem fazed about it. Let's bring in now a guy who knows a lot about the sport of boxing, the one, the only, Boxing Scenes, Cliff Rold. Cliff, how are you, sir?
Hey, Paul. How are you doing this Saturday?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, absolutely, man. Always my pleasure.
And Cliff, yesterday at the weigh-in, Floyd Mayweather, 151, Miguel Cotto, 154. Floyd Mayweather said that he thought Miguel Cotto looked drained. Do you have any observations from the weigh-in?
No, I didn't think Miguel Cotto looked drained. I thought he looked like Miguel Cotto. In fact, he weighed in 2 pounds heavier than his last fight. You know, Floyd is going to take away from the fight what he wants to from the weigh-in. I thought that was a great event on a you know, measured against the greatest stare down of all time, which is probably Tommy Hearns and Wilfred Benitez. That was about an 8.5 on a scale of 10. You know, they put on
good.
A good show for the fans. What's going to matter is in the ring. And you always have to keep in mind, fighters weigh in, you know, more than 24 hours before the fight. So even if he was a little bit drained, he's got all night to recover and rehydrate, and that's what he's done.
And looking at this fight, Cotto goes into this fight as the underdog, but Floyd has not fought at this weight class in 5 years. Do you think that plays a role in this fight?
Not even a little bit. If you look at what Miguel Cotto has done at 154, it's not like he's been fighting a slew of really established, hard-nosed junior middleweights. He fought Yuri Foreman, who can't punch. He fought Ricardo Mayorga, who, you know, I mean, Ricardo Mayorga is somebody you face as a rehab assignment. He rehabbed. And then he faced an Antonio Margarito, who really is a one-eyed fighter, and who doesn't really have any bona fides at 154. I mean, he hasn't really done anything there. So it's not like Miguel Cotto is an established junior middleweight. You know, he hasn't been fighting guys like Arislandi Lara and James Kirkland. He's been fighting guys that were carefully picked to try to rehab him. And let's face it, him and Floyd are about the same size and have been for years.
Right. And Floyd, to your point, is taller than him and has the reach advantage going into this fight.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you're talking about a difference of, I mean, both guys a couple years ago were the two best welterweights in the world until Manny Pacquiao came up and made it three. I mean, these guys are roughly the same size. The size issue is of no matter. What matters is who the better fighter is in the ring. I suspect we'll find out that that's Floyd Mayweather.
I would agree with that. And you look at, you know, Oscar De La Hoya had a lot of success with his jab against Floyd Mayweather. Will the jab be a big part of Cotto's game plan?
Yeah, I mean, one of the guys that I talk to a lot, another writer, is a guy named Stephen Edwards at Boxing Talk, and he pointed out that Stephen trains fighters, and he pointed out that what makes Cotto tricky sometimes is that he throws a counter jab. He actually, you know, he jabs as a counter weapon. That could actually mess with Floyd's rhythm a little bit, but he's not Oscar De La Hoya. He doesn't have the same sort of long jab. Miguel Cotto doesn't have similar speed. I mean, you're talking about a much different fighter. I mean, they're not really comparable fighters. If his jab wreaks havoc on Floyd, it'll be because of how he utilizes it, not just because it's a good jab.
And Cotto likes to switch to southpaw from time to time. Will that be a factor or play any role in this fight?
I don't think so. I mean, he may do it to show off a few times. What's going to matter in this fight is whether Miguel Cotto can land some good stuff and win some early rounds. If he falls behind, Miguel Cotto has struggled in the second half of fights where it's competitive for a long time. He struggled in, you know, he faded down the stretch with Margarito, you know, bad hand wraps or not. I mean, we'll never know about the first fight for sure. You know, Manny Pacquiao, that was a competitive fight for the first five rounds.
Right.
He took it over in the second half. Against Shane Mosley, in a very close fight, Miguel Cotto built up an early lead but had to do a lot of holding in the second half because he starts to fade. He puts so much energy out there. He's got to slow Floyd down. He's got to find a way to get to the body. And he's got to do good work on the rope. And that's something Cotto is good at. I mean, if you look at the Joshua Plotty fight, he had a lot of trouble there. But when he got him to the ropes, he was able to outwork Plotty in a lot of spots. If he can land on Mayweather against the ropes, which is difficult, and manage not to eat that elbow to the face and the right hand over the top, this could get interesting. But, you know, there's a lot of variables that go into making this fight interesting, much less finding a way for Cotto to win.
And looking at it now, I mean, Miguel Cotto, after Margarito fight back in 2008, seems to be a different fighter. How much did that fight take out of Miguel Cotto?
I think it took out a lot. I think that the Pacquiao fight took a lot out of him. I'm not sure that Here's what I think the lasting effect of the Margarito fight is. Cotto is always cut and swells. He cuts and swells worse now. But I mean, he's always taken a lot of punishments in his fight. He got a little bit of an early stoppage in a fight with DeMarcus Corley where he was out on his feet for a little while. He went to war with Ricardo Torres. The Joshua Claudio fight put a lot of miles on him. You know, the Shane Mosley fight and the Zab Judah fight, those were violent encounters. You know, to point to the Margarito fight as a turning point is fair, but you have to factor in that Miguel Cotto's style has meant taking a lot of punishment from a lot of high-quality opponents for a lot of years now.
Right. We're talking to Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com, writer for BoxingScene.com. And Cliff, Floyd Mayweather, 35 years old right now, been impressive in his last couple fights. Do you see any type of decline in his skills, anything, any type of slippage?
A little bit. I mean, you know, he's not as quick as he was when he was younger. I mean, he shouldn't be expected to be. I mean, all you got to do is go back and, you know, a couple weeks ago I watched his fight with Tony Pep on ESPN Classic. You know, you watch his fight with Diego Corrales. It's obvious he's not as quick as he once was. He used to be a little more offensive earlier in fights, although he really opened up on Victor Ortiz. I mean, slippage in the sense that he might have slowed down a little bit, but he makes up for that with a ridiculous work ethic. His defense is nearly impenetrable. I mean, his reflexes are still very good, and his fundamental base is so good that he makes up for any sort of loss in just a little bit of speed. He's not a guy that has won because of ridiculous reflexes. He's not a Roy Jones who sort of does it unorthodox. He is the ultimate orthodox fighter, and he's very good at it.
And you look at Floyd now, it seems like he's more willing to open up. Is that the case? And will that be the case tonight?
It's always dependent on the opponent. With Floyd, he opens up when he can. You know, with a guy like Carlos Baldomir, who had a rock for a head, you know, he outpointed him. He didn't go for the knockout because what was the point? I mean, he's going to hurt your hands. You know, he opens up on guys he can open up on. Against Shane Mosley, he laid down a pretty good beating over the course of the fight. But Shane Mosley was a mummy in the ring. I mean, after two rounds, he had no wind and he couldn't pull the trigger. He hasn't been able to pull the trigger since the Margarito fight, which is why, just as an aside, I'm not excited about the Shane Mosley Saul Alvarez fight on the undercard.
That was my next question.
The look of a pagan sacrifice. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, I think he'll open up if the opportunity presents itself. And one thing about Miguel Cotto, he will present you an opportunity to hit him.
And let's talk about Shane Mosley, Alvarez tonight. Mosley, 40 years old, does not look like he has anything left, cannot pull the trigger to your point, did not pull the trigger against Mayweather, did not pull the trigger against Pacquiao. Will he pull the trigger tonight?
No. I would say that it's highly unlikely. He might land something big early. You know, you never count anyone out in boxing, but I mean, and you don't take too much away from training footage, but what you saw last night on 24/7, just watching Mosley, you know, work the swimming rods or whatever it is that Nassim Richardson has, he looks slow even in training. He looks like a guy whose body is heavy, who has slowed down like he should at 40 years old. If he wants to continue on, you know, the sad thing about boxing is that it's always been willing to eat its old. This is part of the cycle of the sport. You know, it's the ritual. You know, you feed the old name to the new lions. I mean, you've seen it in recent years. Roy Jones went over to Russia to fight Denis Lebedev, you know, got knocked out. Evander Holyfield has been fed to a number of young fighters over the years. I mean, if they'll stick around, they'll give them to you. It's sad to watch. It's ritual sacrifice, but it is part of the sport.
Definitely. And looking at it now with Floyd after his fight, a few weeks later, Floyd will report to prison. But he says he's going to fight again in 2012. I don't think it'll be against Pacquiao. But a guy that is very interesting and a guy I think I would like to see him in with, but I don't think we will, is Sergio Martinez. Does that happen?
It could. If they could make it happen in 154, I know it's been talked about before. I think that'd be an interesting fight. I wonder how Martinez, if he could keep his fastball, having to lose weight. He hasn't fought at 154 in a long time. But, I mean, you know, if he thinks he can make it safely and they want to do it, I don't see why it couldn't happen. I'm not sure if that's the direction they'll go. If Saul Alvarez is impressive tonight, Floyd Mayweather, Saul Alvarez around Mexican Independence Day weekend could do huge numbers. I know Floyd is tentatively scheduled for a 90-day sentence, but, I mean, he's not – Not to discount, you know, his jail sentence or its impact, but he's not going to prison. He's going to county. The chances are he'll be out pretty quick. I mean, we've seen with other celebrities who have been locked up recently, they don't stay long. It's not cost-effective for county jails to keep celebrities in there. So we'll see how long his sentence is and how soon he can be back in the ring. It wouldn't shock me to see him back by September or November.
And, Cliff, we got to get your prediction tonight. Mayweather, Cotto, how do you see this one playing out?
Look, if there was an upset, I think it would be one of the bigger upsets in recent memory, if only because nobody is picking Miguel Cotto to win this fight. This fight sort of reminds me of, you know, Oscar De La Hoya, Fernando Vargas, where it was long anticipated, something people wanted to see, something where you anticipated a good fight, where going in you were almost 100% sure of who the winner was going to be. I suspect that Floyd might stop him late on cuts or swelling. He could, you know, put him on his back late. I see some good rounds in the first eight. The most likely outcome is a decision for Floyd Mayweather.
And, Cliff, talk about some of the good things going on at BoxingScene.com.
Oh, there's a lot going on. I mean, we're getting ready. It's a busy schedule for the next little bit. You got Amir Khan, Lamont Peterson coming up, Manny Pacquiao next month in a fight with Timothy Bradley that is flying a little bit under the radar. That's a fantastic fight. You know, and we'll see how the rest of the year plays out. Hopefully, we'll see good officiating. We've seen some god-awful decisions in the last 12 months, some borderline terrible in-ring refereeing. Let's hope none of that comes up tonight or in any of the big fights going forward. It really casts a pall on the sport to see some of the terrible, terrible officiating that's been dominating, and hopefully that's what we can see less of for the rest of the year.
And one final question. Will we see Pacquiao Mayweather at any point?
I don't care at this point.
Okay.
If they keep winning, it's always going to be viable. If one of them loses, it might actually get more realistic because of the economics. Personally, I really just don't care anymore. What I care about is if these two are going to continue to fight and be the stars, that they fight good opponents if they're not going to fight each other. There are fights right now on schedule, Miguel Cotto, Timothy Bradley for Pacquiao. Those are good, solid fights. There's very little to complain about in those matchups unless your sole complaint is Mayweather isn't fighting Pacquiao. It's been over 2 years of this. Enough's enough. I mean, if they want to play the prima donna game together, there's no reason for everyone else to sit around and get all uptight about it.
And, Cliff, you have a preview of this fight at BoxingScene.com, correct?
That is right. It's right up top of the main page. It's the Cinco de Mayweather preview. That's what we have this weekend. It's Cinco de Mayo weekend, but tonight is Cinco de Mayweather, and we're just hoping for a good fight.
Cliff Roll, BoxingScene.com. Pleasure talking to you, sir. As always, let's do this again.
Absolutely, Paul. Look forward to it. Take care, buddy.
Cliff Rold, BoxingScene.com, previews the big fight tonight. Mayweather, Cotto, 154-pound belt on the line tonight. I'm looking forward to it. I really am looking forward to this big fight tonight. And hopefully, you know, it's a competitive fight. But hopefully, here's my wish. I know Cliff doesn't want to see Pacquiao. He doesn't really care about Pacquiao Mayweather at this point. But I would love for Mayweather to continue to win and for Bradley to continue, I mean, not Bradley, for Pacquiao to continue to win with the hope that these two titans will get together at some point, preferably at the end of this year, more than likely in 2013. The CD2 Titans get it done. Get in the ring. A lot of money could be made. And speaking of money, Floyd is Money Mayweather, and Money Mayweather is going to make $32 million for a night's work. $32 million, big ones, tonight for Floyd Mayweather. What a country. What a country we live in. What a brother would do to be Floyd Mayweather after he cashes that $32 million check. What a brother would do to be Floyd Money Mayweather after he cashes that check tonight. $32 million, big ones. Hopefully he pays his taxes. I know he's had some issues with that in the past, but hopefully Floyd pays the taxes. But man, oh man. Floyd Mayweather, a guy. Floyd Mayweather, you look at him. The one thing about Mayweather hard work, dedication, as he always says, but he does truly work hard. But the thing about him, he works hard, he's dedicated to his craft, but he knows how to sell himself. Say what you will about the guy that you hate him, that maybe you love him, but the reality is you are watching him. And that's all that matters for Floyd Money Mayweather in a lot of ways. It comes down to money. He's about money. He is a part of the money team. A lot of people are a part of the money team. Floyd Mayweather is about that dollar. He's about getting that paper, as they like to say in the streets. He's about that. And the reality is $32 million is coming his way. A record purse, $32 million. A record $32 million for Floyd Mayweather tonight, for a night's work. And he's going to win. He's going to win tonight. He's going to win tonight, and he's going to continue to make money. The reality is Floyd Mayweather is at the top in boxing. He is the pay-per-view king. He is the pay-per-view king. Miguel Cotto is the champion. Floyd Mayweather is the pay-per-view king. You look at the pay-per-views, it goes Mayweather, it goes Pacquiao, and then it goes Miguel Cotto. So two of the top three pay-per-view guys are going to be fighting tonight, Miguel Cotto and Floyd Mayweather. Cinco de Mayo is on and popping tonight. And you talk about Saul Alvarez getting it on with Shane Mosley. And Shane Mosley's done. And he's a warrior. He's a legend. But he's done. And you hope that he gets out of this fight unscathed. No damage, really. But he looks like a done fighter against Mayweather. He was not sharp at all. He had one round. Against Pacquiao, he had nothing. Against Sergio Mora, he wasn't great there either. He cannot pull the trigger. And when you can't pull the trigger, you're in trouble. When you can't pull the trigger, you're in a lot of trouble. And that's just life in the sport of boxing. That is life in the sport of boxing. You can't pull the trigger, you're in trouble. You are in big time trouble. But you look at it now, it's going to be a big fight. The weighing was great. The weighing was beautiful. That was beautiful. Nice stare down. Nice little stare down there. And it was great. It was great. And I just saw something here. Excuse me. Excuse me. I just saw something here, 10-year anniversary of you talking about practice. 10-year anniversary, you're talking about practice. And that is Allen Iverson. When he talked about, when he had that rant, you talking about practice? Not a game. Practice. Not a game. But practice. Practice. You're talking about practice. And Allen Iverson, 10-year anniversary of that. Wow. Can you believe that was 10 years ago? 2002. 10 years ago. 10 years ago. That's surprising. 10 years ago. And I talked about earlier, talked about 1994 and how that's 18 years ago. It don't seem that long ago. And now you have 2002, which is 10 years ago. Again, doesn't seem that long ago. It just doesn't. But 10 years ago, Allen Iverson was talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about practice. Great show for you today. Great, great show as always. We want to thank Pooch Hall for joining us. Make sure you check him out on The Game each and every Tuesday, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock Central on BET. Also, make sure you follow him on Twitter, @IM_PoochHall. We also want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. Excuse me. Also, Cliff Rold of BoxingScene.com. We thank him for stopping by as well. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. For everybody here, go for it. And also, real quickly, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, at GoForItGAN. That's at GoForItGAN on Twitter. Follow me there. I say a lot of nice, great things. And also, I follow back. So make sure you follow me on Twitter. Make sure you follow me everywhere I go. What we're going to do is we're about to go off the air, but we can do a podcast and we can have people listen to it later. You okay with that? Hello? Hello? How's Thomas? Hello? How's Thomas? For everybody here, go for it. Make sure you listen to the show each and every week, blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. Listen there. Great show. We like to have a good old time here on Go For It. So make sure you listen to the show, blogtalkradio.com/PGAN. Also, follow us on Twitter, at Go For It Again. We have a lot of fun here on Go For It. For everybody here, Go For It Again. Have a great day. See you later. Bye.